imagine having the flu, the worst flu you've ever had, lasting for twice as long as a flu normally lasts. So normally three or four days. This is like, you know, 7-8 days, horrible fever, headaches, everything.
Hey, and welcome to the Tarun Stevenson Leadership Channel, where we're helping you lead, communicate, and grow to your full potential. I'm your host, Tarun Stevenson. Whatever portal you are tuning in on, whether it's YouTube, Facebook, your favorite podcast, or Instagram, make sure you subscribe and follow so you don't miss any of our episodes. Let's get into it. Hey guys, Tarun Stevenson here for Lead, Communicate, Grow, and I'm here with my good friend Evan Pete. I've known him for, I think it's 25 years now, isn't it, Evan? We met each other, you know, in our early 20s, and Evan is an incredible church leader in New York. He leads Bridge Community Church, and he's a great friend of mine. And I've asked him to come on today because he's actually had a very close hand experience with COVID-19. He and his wife were actually tested positive to it. And I wanted him to share some of his story of his experience, because I think for me personally, in Australia, it feels a little bit disconnected from what's going on in the rest of the world. We've been very fortunate in Australia. Cases have been very low in number. And after hearing Evan's story, it really struck a chord with me and helped me to sit up and take notice of what's going on. But I'm really also very interested in how Evan is leading through this situation. You know, one of the organizations that have been hit hard, and everybody has, is churches. Churches have had to close down all over the world. And I know Evan's been facing some significant challenges being in New York and having such a significant impact of this virus in New York. And so we just want to talk to him about that. But before we get into it, Evan, welcome. And it's great to have you here. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe something that we don't know about you that our listeners and our watchers would like to get to know you.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? I'm Evan, and you probably feel a bit ripped off when you hear that I'm from New York and then I have an Australian accent, but I am actually originally an Aussie. I grew up in Sydney. I'm from Bankstown, and in 2015, God spoke to my wife and I to move to New York and be involved in church leadership over here. And so we stepped out in faith, and probably the thing that people don't know about me is that I'm a musician. Yeah. And I was actually in a band with Tarun, but he never let me play. And I've got issues with Tarun about that. And one day I'm working through the process of forgiveness at the moment.
Yes, yes. You've never got over it, have you?
Never.
Evan is actually a very talented rap. I mean, is that what you call it now, rapping? I don't know. I never knew the correct terminology. Is it MC? Or what's
that'll
the...
Do. That'll do.
Yeah, that'll do. And Evan's been very heavily involved in the hip-hop scene in the late 80s, early 90s in Australia, and so he's got a lot of experience in that regard. But tell us about your recent experiences, Evan, in testing positive to COVID, because as I said earlier, you know, up until watching your video, I was probably one of the people that wasn't taking it very seriously. I sort of thought, oh, yeah, well, it's clearly not something that's going to have a huge impact on us. But then having someone my age, you know, living in a Western democracy, being impacted as significantly as you do, I mean, would it be safe to say you nearly lost your life with this, didn't you?
Yeah, it was pretty full on. So I was in San Francisco. We organized to have a birthday party for my mother-in-law, who's from New Zealand, and all the family came together in San Francisco. And then we flew back on about, I think it was the 9th of February, no, March. And then about 2 days later, I started feeling really sick. And that was really early days of the shutdowns and all. So they were talking about shutting things down, and they were talking about coronavirus, but they hadn't really, you know, it was early days of testing here in New York anyway. Okay. And so my wife and I had some friends that worked in the medical field. So we contacted them and said, listen, they're doing testing here. Go and check it out. So we went to the hospital. It took 4 hours to get our tests done. And the doctors basically said to us, listen, it's going to take 5 days to get the result back, but we can tell you that you've got it. based on all the symptoms and everything you're showing, you've got it. So I went home, had the worst quarantine experience of my life. Basically was locked in the basement of my house for a week, but it didn't really matter because I couldn't go anywhere anyway. I felt horrible. It was, imagine having the flu, the worst flu you've ever had, lasting for twice as long as a flu normally lasts. So normally 3 or 4 days. This is like, you know, 7-8 days, horrible fever, headaches, everything. Anyway, around and at the time as well, I'm a pastor of a church, my youth pastor, my music director, all of them came down at the same time. So we actually couldn't even run a service that Sunday. All we did was send a link to a video from another church and said, watch this. Because we just we were just all taken out and there was nothing we could do about it. And so on the, you know, I was on the Sunday, I was starting to feel a bit better. And then on the Monday, I was relaxed and everything. I went to sleep. And then about 1 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and I just could not get any air into my lungs. And so I'm like, this is a problem. So I went upstairs where my wife was to alert her. And the amount of energy it took me to get up the stairs caused me to collapse when I walked into the room. Wow. And so she freaked out, rings 911, which is the number you call in America, not in Australia. Yeah. And and I was collapsed on the floor. And basically, you know, I came to, she put me on a chair, and then it was, I felt like I was having a heart attack. I couldn't get any air in. I went white, clammy, sweating. It was just horrific. And the ambulance came and they gave me some oxygen and I immediately started to feel a little bit better. Anyway, I went to the emergency room. I was in there for about 5 hours and just in this room by myself because they knew that I had it and that I'd tested. By this time, my positive test came back. And so at that point, because I was COVID positive, they put me in this room by myself with nobody else. Wow. And eventually they said, okay, you know, doctor, we'll see you now. They took me into the actual emergency room. And as I went in, there were literally like beds too deep in the hallways getting into the rooms. There were so many people in the emergency room. So they took me past, they took me into the room. They did a bunch of tests. And to cut a long story short, the doctor came back in and told me, listen, we've seen a number of situations of people who have this virus that it just out of, for no particular reason, cause your lungs to just spasm.
Wow.
And so literally that's what happened. So it was just, it was only like a 10 minute period, but it was the scariest 10 minutes of my life. Let me tell you, when you can't get any air in, it was like that. And then about 3 or 4 days later, when I tested positive, my wife tested positive to corona and to something else, another virus. And so about 4 or 5 days later, her breathing was getting really bad. Thankfully, again, I have a few doctors in our church. I rang one of the doctors and she spoke to my wife, Moira, and then said, put Evan back on the phone. And she said to me, take her to the emergency room now. Right. And so that was Friday night. We took her into the emergency room on Friday night and then she was in there for a full 7 days and her breathing, it was just, it was horrible. And literally for the first 4 days, nothing improved. Like it was just getting worse and worse. And I'd seen so many situations where you can't visit anybody. You know, there's no visitors, there's no one extra allowed in the hospitals. And so I'd seen a number of cases where they dropped someone off at the emergency room and never seen them again. Wow. So I was panicking like for, you know, for a good 4 days. I'm freaking out. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to talk to my wife. She can't even talk, you know, because she just couldn't get enough air in, so she couldn't talk. And thankfully, the Wednesday she was supposed to come home, she didn't come home on the Wednesday. Then on the Thursday in the night, they said, look, if you can stay off oxygen overnight, then we'll send you home in the morning. And so thankfully that Thursday night she was able to stay off the oxygen and then they sent her home on the Friday. Now it's Wednesday. She's much better now, but it was really, really scary. And let me tell you, like I've had people like sending me jokes and things about COVID. I've had a number of my friends' pastors die. I've had a number of people in our neighborhood, members of families, I had a phone call from a guy this afternoon who said, I've had two of my family members die and no one will come and pray for my family.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Just this afternoon on the phone, and he was just bawling on the phone. And this guy's a tradie, you know. He's not, you know, he's a man's man, and it's just, it's tough, you know, what people are facing here. And all the stats that are coming out are only of the people that have actually been tested. They didn't do a lot of testing. Like, all of my children got it as well. Mm-hmm. Or not all of my children. Sorry, three of my children got it. And they said, don't bother testing them. They've got it.
Okay.
They're just assuming that they have it.
And how did the children fare compared to you and Maura? Were they affected as badly, or was it not as severe?
So they didn't get as sick as we did. They were sick, but they weren't as debilitated as we were. You know, I don't know if debilitated is the word, but they three or four days, really tough fevers and headaches and all that sort of stuff. But they bounced back a lot quicker than we did.
Okay, right. And so everyone's either recovered or on the mend right now.
Yeah, so all the kids are doing fine now.
Great.
Thankfully, we have a two-year-old daughter. She hasn't gotten sick at all. We also have my wife's mother staying with us at the moment.
Yeah.
And she hasn't gotten sick at all either. So we're very thankful for that. Thankfully, as soon as we heard about the quarantining, we quarantined straight away.
Right.
So as soon as I got home, I went downstairs and didn't leave for a week. And the kids were dropping food at the top of the stairs for me and that sort of thing. So I watched a lot of Netflix.
Yeah, I can imagine. well, thankfully, you guys did survive, and you are recovering, and that's good, so good to hear. And one of the things I think really made me sit up and take notice is because a lot of the public notices have been saying that immunocompromised people or elderly people or very young children would be severely affected, but most other people would experience mild symptoms. And so I'm thinking as a mid-40s person, okay, even if I got it, it's probably not going to be that serious. But then seeing your story just made me sit up and say, well, actually, no, Evan's the same age as me, and, you know, it clearly affects people in their 40s quite severely.
And younger. We have people in their 20s and stuff, and people that didn't have pre-existing conditions that are on ventilators right now here in New York. It's intense.
Yeah. So that's really important to remember. And I think, you know, just for anybody that's watching right now, I think one of the things that it's really easy to do when you're in a place where it doesn't appear as close to home, you know, in Australia, we haven't got that many cases, and we thankfully haven't had a huge spread, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't be vigilant. Because I think part of the challenge has been, you know, navigating this in a global economy is that a great many people have not taken it seriously to start off with because they didn't believe it would affect them. But, you know, we can see New York, I mean, such a densely populated city, I can understand why it has spread so quickly, but, you know, it's affecting everybody and it should be taken very seriously.
And Queens is the worst affected, where you actually stayed when you were here, Tarun, you know, like the area not far from where you stayed. Elmhurst is the worst. They have mile-long lines of people
with
symptoms to get into the hospital.
Is that right? Well, and we were there, in January? And it was already starting. And, I mean, we had no clue back then that there was anything to be concerned about. So, that's incredible. Now, tell me a little bit. I want to just shift the story a little bit towards your church now. And, you know, obviously, as a personal experience, this has been really traumatic. You've got five kids. You've got your mom at home. You know, your wife and you are sick. Clearly a very traumatic experience as a family. But then as a leader, you've got a whole bunch of other people who are also looking to you. And when the leader's taken out, what has the response been like from your people? How have they reacted or handled the knowledge that their leader is out of action, let alone themselves?
So we've been really blessed. We have an amazing group of people in our church, and I'm not saying that just to, you know, talk us up, but we literally had people not just providing us with medical help, but, you know, we had boxes of shopping dropped on our doorstep. We had people buying us meals and having them delivered to our house. We had, calls of prayer and support from all over the world. It's just been like amazing. People that I haven't seen for 20 years have been contacting us and just saying, hey, we've been moved and we were praying for you guys. And and that has been super encouraging. And even for Moira, when she was in the hospital, there was a few times there where she was pretty down and people would just jump. And because people were ringing me and I'm like, listen, I don't have any update for you, I said, but just send her a text, send her a message, encourage her. And people like friends, we had friends from Australia. I had a friend who's a pastor of a church that I've never been to.
Right.
Send us money. One of the pastors sent my wife a psalm that God placed on his heart while he was praying for her. Just phenomenal support, firstly from our church, but also from the wider church, from the Big C church, all over the globe. And it's just been, phenomenal.
Amazing. Yeah. And so what are some of the impacts that it's had on your church congregation? Obviously, you can't do church services. And you said, half your leadership was taken out within a week. So how has that impacted the way that you operate as an organization and the things that you do in your community?
So the first thing I would say is our church is really affected in that probably half of my congregation works in the medical field.
Yeah.
So we have doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists. These are the people that are on the front line, and there's a number of them. And so we need to continually be encouraging and supporting them. I mean, these are the people that are taking their lives in their own hands to go into these hospitals. They're treating COVID patients all day, every day. One of the guys in our church is what they call a PA, a physician's assistant. And he normally, works with a particular doctor, and he went into work one day and they said, we don't need you doing the operations that you're doing. We need you in a crash unit. And so basically a crash unit is anyone that, codes, they have to go and resuscitate them. And so he spent like a week or so just going in and trying to bring people back to life, and they lost a heap of them. And so that's traumatic for people. I don't think people understand how traumatic seeing some of these things are for people, And so even though I was out of commission for 1 week, I knew that I had to get up pretty quickly. Yeah. And thankfully, with our team all getting it around the same time, we got it early. So we only missed one Sunday. And then we were able to straight away mobilize. And so even before, as soon as I got sick, and not just for me, but we instituted daily prayer meetings and fasting, So we've been having a prayer meeting every day from midday to one for the last 3 weeks. And then we also started doing like midweek, I do a communion service on a Wednesday night via Zoom. And then we started having online services. And the first one we did was pretty rickety. We were still all pretty sick. We basically just filmed ourselves. I actually filmed myself sitting here. This is in my office. I filmed myself. Our worship director did his sitting on his couch, and we just sort of, cobbled something together. Yeah. But then as the weeks have gone, we've started to get a little bit more professional with what we've been putting up there. But what has been amazing is that we've been reaching more people doing this than we normally do on a Sunday. I mean, we average about 120 on a Sunday. Yeah. We're getting 400 people watching our online services weekly. I've got a friend that pastors a church down the road. He's under the pump as well, and his church averages around 900. They're getting 4,000 people watching their services every Sunday, because not just the church but the community is crying out for hope, and we need to be the people that are delivering that.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I want you to talk to, like, I've got some listeners that are perhaps not believers, or they maybe don't have a faith per se. For you and I, we're both people of faith, and the church is very important. And I can see the importance of having a faith community in times like this, when you're talking about prayer and having people support you and encourage you. Can you talk to what you've seen as the essential role that spiritual connection has played in people's lives as they've gone through this, because I'm hearing more and more stories about people in the wider community who are looking to the church for some reassurance, for some hope, for some comfort in a time where there seems to be very little available. You know, for somebody who's not a person of faith, what would you say about the importance of spiritual connection, and how do we help to make that connection for people who maybe are disconnected in that way?
Well, I think people are clamoring for answers. And unfortunately, you know, at the moment, politics, science, we're all sort of clamoring to try and bring some sort of sense to this chaos. And one of the upsides of spirituality is that we see that there's more than this.
Yeah.
That this is not necessarily the end. And so even though it's tragic and it's horrific for people, and we're not minimizing people's pain, yeah, but we believe that this is not the end.
Yeah.
And so that gives people encouragement. That gives people you know, that hope. I think hope is right now is crucial. And I think, yeah, you know, that spirituality provides that hope. I also think that, you know, for me, this isn't the first tragedy and the first calamity that's hit the world. And so the Bible has a lot to say about instances in the past. And so I've been reading a lot from books like Lamentations, where basically a guy like Jeremiah, who's just seen his city destroyed and the royal family taken away into captivity, what's his response at that time? And so I think the Bible has a lot to say about dealing with grief, dealing with our emotions, you know, being able to wave your fist at someone. Because I think there are people, you know, you know, there's some spirituality which hasn't been healthy, like acting like it's not happening. I don't think that's helpful. I think right now we need to be able to say, this sucks.
Yeah.
Why is this happening? And we need to be able to say it to someone. And God can take it. He's got pretty broad shoulders. Yeah. And so I've been encouraging people, and to use the hip-hop vernacular, to keep it real.
Yeah.
You know, and own our emotion. Own that we're afraid. Own that we're upset. Own that, you know, you know, this doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. So talk to me about, as a leader, we have the tendency, I guess a lot of leaders are wired to look if you're a visionary leader, you tend to look for the silver lining in everything, or you tend to look for the way forward. That's the way a lot of leaders are wired. And our Queensland executive leader John Hunt said recently, he said, we have a tendency to be victorious, but we need to remember that we are leading people who are broken and they're hurting. And so there's this interface between empathy and also hope, where you can't be despairing as a leader because people are looking to you to lead them with hope. But at the same time, you can't be so optimistic that you forget there are people on the front line who are suffering. How do you as a leader keep that sense of buoyancy, keep that sense of hope and optimism while still being empathetic and supportive of the people that are struggling through their pain?
By creating opportunities for people to make a difference.
Yeah.
I think that's huge. And I think for us, you know, like, okay, I've had a difficult time, but I haven't had it the worst.
Right.
You know, and so there are still needs out there. There are people that are locked in their house. There are senior citizens that can't go to the store.
Yes.
And so we're looking to try and create opportunities for people to serve and people to be a blessing. And then when people feel like they're helping someone, then they can own that victory. Yeah. You know, I might not have healed everyone, but this box of groceries is making someone's life better. So all those small wins add up to a victory, big victory. And so that's the whole, you know, starfish thing. You know, well, I can't save all the starfish, but I can save one. one. You know, and so I actually was on a phone call this afternoon, and we got something exciting happening in our community here, where I talked to our mayor, and the mayor and I are having a conference call with other church leaders in our community and business leaders in our community, to say we're actually going to support businesses, and support needy people in our community. So we're going to buy meals, and have them delivered to people that are isolated. And so it's we're creating win-wins. And I think, you know, for people, you know, people that are, there are a lot of people that are still genuinely afraid. You know, and not just afraid, but, you know, wanting to do the right thing. They don't want to leave their house. They don't want to get anybody else sick. They don't want to get sick themselves. And so they're like, well, I can't do that. Like, but you can buy someone else a meal. You know, you can fling $20 and you can make someone's life better tonight. And you can also support a local business that helps them keep their staff on.
You know, because,
you know, we can't eat at restaurants, but those restaurants still have chefs and people to pay. And so we need to be, you know, getting those small wins. And all of a sudden, when you see someone that's under the pump, you start to realize, you know, okay, I've been through a tough time, but in the context of things, it's, you know, it's limited in comparison to what they're going through right now.
So what I hear you saying is that as a leader, you're not looking to become a crutch for people, but you're looking to empower people to serve others, and in serving others, they will actually help themselves to lift themselves out of their own despair. As you turn your attention to the needs of others, you take your attention off perhaps the despair of yourself. Is that what you're really trying to say?
On the money. You said it very clearly, Terry.
I love it. And that's, you know, I've often said, you know, when you're in crisis, the one thing you've got to make sure you do is just do something to move yourself forward. And even if it's a tiny little thing, do something to move yourself forward and take your eyes off your situation. So, you know, that's just such great wisdom. Look, we're coming to the close of our time together. Evan, is there anything else you would like to share with leaders, whether they're leaders of churches or leaders of businesses? What's a piece of advice that you'd like to just share with anybody that's listening today and perhaps wondering how they continue to move through the challenges? Because like you say, a lot of business owners are suffering because they've had to close their businesses down. They've got staff that need to be paid. What would you say to those kind of leaders?
I think right now, you know, I was glad that you asked me to come and talk to you about this, because I think right now we need leadership more than ever. And I think, you know, people need to stand up, and whatever strata they're in, whether they're a business owner, whether they're, you know, a community leader, whether they're a church leader, whether they're in government, whatever, I think all of us need to, you know, if this can't unite us, what will? You know, and all this picking fights and blaming each other, and you're not of my political leaning, therefore I'm not going to work with you, you know, that's just garbage. You know, when lives are on the line, people are looking for someone to step up, and let it be you. Let it be you that steps up. And again, you don't have to do necessarily some rocket science. You know, some of the things can be really simple. Just one initiative that we're doing, and I don't want to, you know, this isn't a bragging thing, but I did some work with a ministry in New York that serves homeless people. And right now, no one's helping the homeless. And if they get sick, imagine what it would be like for them. And so this particular organization, they give homeless men showers where you come in the morning, they give you a new set of clothes, they give you a pair of shoes and you know, new socks and undies, and you have a shower, a hot shower. And so I was like, at this time, no one's donating clothes. And so if you've got it, you know, at the moment, you know, all of our medical workers, they take all their clothes off before they walk into their house because they're, you know, covered in disease. If people are out in the street and they're covered in it, what happens for them? A lot of people are locked in their houses. Use it as an opportunity to spring clean, right? Grab some shirts and pants that were last season and you're not going to wear anymore, right? You know, get I looked at my wardrobe and the amount of kicks that I have that have never got off the bench, right? Yeah. And so I just put together a bag and I'm like, if I can do this, how many more can do this? And so I just put it out to our church, and then we put it out to our community. And now, and what we're doing is, you don't have to actually come and you know, meet somebody. We just have these boxes set up on the street. You pull up in your car, you grab your stuff out of the boot, chuck it in the box and drive away.
Great.
But you're actually tangibly helping someone, and it's really simple and anyone can do it.
I love it. And you, I think you hit it on the head right at the end. It's actually really simple to help people. It doesn't take a lot. It's just doing something. A local high school, my wife actually works at, one of the things they've done is they partnered with our church because we have a food pantry. And so we do grocery hampers for $25 that would normally be, you know, $100 worth of groceries. And so what the high school did was they contacted us and said, well, we want to buy 40 hampers. And then they contacted the families in their schools that were struggling and said, hey, we've got some groceries for you. And they just made that available. And these are just some great examples of how just something small, you, if you partner with other organizations, partner with local community groups or churches or businesses, I think together we can actually make a really significant difference in the lives of people who are hurting. So that's great wisdom there. Evan, if anybody wants to find out about what – sorry, go on, you were going to say something else.
Say,
please.
If you don't care who gets the credit, anything can be achieved.
Good. I love it.
It's not about getting our name up.
Yes.
I think that's what's really important.
Yeah, that's good. And that's a good reminder because, you know, in this time we really don't – we can't afford to be worrying about our brand. Brands are not important when everybody's hurting. You've just, you know, it's a community effort and we're all going through it. So, yeah, that's good wisdom. I like it a lot. So if anybody wants to find out more about what you're doing or maybe support the work that you're doing, Evan, where can they go to connect with you and to learn more about Bridge Community Church?
Yeah, so we just our website's www.bridgeccny.org, or you can just jump on Facebook and we're Bridge Community Church, or Instagram or YouTube, you know, subscribe to our YouTube channel. So YouTube starts giving us money. That'd be nice. And other than that, you know, contact us.
That's awesome.
Room.
All right. Well, we're going to put the links in the description. And, you know, if you're in New York and you want to get connected and get involved, I highly recommend Bridge Community Church and my mate Evan. They're doing a tremendous work over there. Or if you've, you know, maybe you're not in New York, but you've been moved by this story and you want to do something to support the work that they're doing, connect with them. And just like Evan said, just do something. We can all do something. And the beauty of the global economy that we live in with all the technology we have, we can be on the other side of the world and still make a difference. So, you know, make sure you connect with Evan. Evan, thank you so much for giving up your time today to talk to us and share that wisdom with us. I've really enjoyed our chat, and I hope our listeners have enjoyed the chat as well.
Thank you, Tarun. It's always a pleasure, and I really inspired watching your little videos myself. I get inspired, as you know, hearing the you always communicate things so much better than me. You know, like
thanks,
you know, it's not fair. I'm like, I'm going to steal that every time I listen to one of your videos.
Matt, trust me, I'm stealing from somebody else, so don't worry. It's all good. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Evan, and love to the family, and stay safe. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you got a ton of value out of that. Don't forget to like, comment, and share with somebody who you think will benefit. And make sure you check the description for the free resources that I want to send your way to help you in your growth journey. Until next time, I'm Tarun Stevenson, helping you lead, communicate, and grow to your full potential.